Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast that delves deep into the culture of complexities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. Each week, we explore different facets of cult life and human trafficking, from the psychological manipulation to the brave stories of those who have escaped.
Hello, everyone. I'm Melody. I'm Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I'm here as an advocate for fellow survivors. My journey has inspired me to help others who find themselves in similar situations. This podcast is committed to respecting our guests' privacy to ensure their comfort and safety. We offer them the option to remain anonymous.
Additionally, we would like to include a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by our hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. Cultimatum is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information shared by our hosts and guests. The content discussed on this podcast is based on personal experiences, opinions, and speculation, and should not be construed as professional services or advice. Neither the host nor the guest are assuming liability for any misuse or reliance on the information presented. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
Before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may explore explicit and potentially disturbing topics such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And I am Anonymous Andrew, and I am here with my co-host, Melody. Hi, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. How are you doing today?
Okay, I'm going to say I'm doing great.
That's always a loaded question.
No. Because today I'm doing well. I am talking to a young lady on a dating app, and I'm happy.
Okay.
for the audience, we're going to do something different today. Melody, tell the audience what we're doing today.
We are doing another, I'm going to call it a commentary on a documentary. And the title of the documentary that we're going to talk about today is Daughters of the Cult. I am going to tell you that you can find this on Hulu and Disney. It just came out in January of 2024. So it's a fairly newly released cult documentary. And I'm going to read just a quick little summary of what the documentary is about. And then Andrew and I are going to dive into talking about it. This particular documentary delves into the dark history of Herval LeBaron and the Church of the Firstborn Lamb of God. This group was led by LeBaron, who claimed to be a prophet and enforced a reign of terror through his very extreme beliefs, including the doctrine of blood atonement. The film focuses on the lives of women and children who were born into this violent and manipulative cult, detailing their struggles under LeBaron's leadership and their efforts to escape the cult's control. Through their personal accounts of those who lived through this nightmare, Daughters of the Cult exposes the dangerous grip that religious extremism can have on families and the incredible resilience it takes to break free. So that's a little summary of what it's about. You want me to start, Andrew?
I have a statement to make that you can comment on, and then okay. I'll let you just go from there.
Okay.
After watching, so I think, what is it, 5 or 6 episodes? The first episode was very long. It was almost an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. Yes. And I said, oh my God, if I have to watch 2 hours of, but the next episode was like 30 minutes or 40 minutes. And so it got easier because just in the world of time, like to watch, sit down and watch, you know, 8 hours of an episode of a documentary is, I don't have that time.
Right.
But it got easier because each episode got shorter. So that's number one. If you're going to watch right. it, just know that the first episode is very long. The second, third, fourth are much shorter. I have an issue with the idea that this is a cult, and we're going to get into this.
Okay.
It started as a cult. It was a religious organization, and yes. It went into the polygamy thing. So this guy, Herval, yeah, it's Herval, which they bring up a couple times, sounds very much like evil. All you got to do yes. is drop the R and it's evil. Yes. So Herval LeBron was a, and then he became a polygamist and he started marrying all these women. And I think he was from the Mormons, right? He branched off from the Mormons or took some of the Mormons.
Yes, it was a, it was from the Mormons originally. And he originally, the original name of the cult was the Church of the Firstborn, or no, the Church of the First Fullness of Times. And that was a church he was running kind of with his brother. And then they ended up, he had this difference of belief with his brother. He was more extreme and he was more violent. And he really was into this blood atonement law, which basically is saying that.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's where I was going.
I think that was one of his biggest differences with his brother. And he branched off from his brother and they ended up splitting. And I don't know. Maybe half the members went with the brother and half went with him, but they divided.
Right.
And they became a splinter group.
Okay. This guy, Ervil, started, I know it was confusing.
Yes.
He started killing people.
Yes.
Right off the bat, if there was somebody who went against him or threatened him, he had them literally assassinated. It wasn't like he went over there and beat him up himself. He sent a hitman. And they walked in with a pistol and they walked right up to the person and they put two shots in the chest and one in the head. And I remember that. Yes. And they reenacted it, of course, several times.
Yes.
And this was the theme throughout the whole documentary. And I think at the very end, they said in the history of the 30 years of this whole thing, somewhere in the neighborhood of 48 people were killed,
33 killed, 9 suicides.
Do you have the stats?
33 were killed, 9 suicides. And of course, they said many others suffered the consequences of those deaths and suicides.
Right. And up until all of the interviews we've done, nobody was ever killed in a cult. So this one threw me. That's all I'm just trying to say. It's a cult and it was a religious organization, but this guy seemed to focus mostly on just getting rid of his enemies, the people that went against him. And
yes,
he
aggressively.
And he didn't do the killings, right? He might have done one or two. But he hired, not hired, he had his followers, very much like Manson did, Charles Manson.
Although they did say at the end, I'm going to give a spoiler alert, I'm going to give a little spoiler here, that he ends up being at least part of... He ends up going and killing his own brother and his right-hand man, which was Dan. What was Dan's last name? I have it written down here somewhere. Dan Jordan. Jordan, I think, is the one who actually killed the brother. But I think he was there at the time of that murder. So, I mean, even to the point of killing his own brother. So extreme. It was almost kind of like it became this consistent rivalry because he didn't do it right away. It was like years later, he went back and ended up killing his
brother.
Oh,
he planned these things. Yes. Yeah, they talked about how well they were. So let's just jump to the 4 p.m. killings, which was a national news back in like 1997 or something, where 4 people were killed in the cult at the same time, and they were all dressed in blue suits, they all wore beards, and they all stole a black pickup truck. And it was like the perfect crime because the attorneys, the prosecuting attorneys, said that it was almost impossible to prosecute this case because the hitmen all looked alike, and they all wore costumes. And all, but you see where I'm going? I focused on the killing so much that if it wasn't for, and by the way, there were many women or children or the adult children that they were interviewing, which was great because you got a lot of insight. It started as a cult. It started as a religious group. But to me, it almost seemed like it turned into a criminal organization.
And I can see that, Andrew, but think about this. How much brainwashing did there have to be for him to get his members to do these murders for him? There was a lot of brainwashing involved in these organized and those really organized ones. That wasn't even him. That was his son, Aaron LeBaron, who ended up organizing the 4 o'clock murders. It wasn't even him. He was long dead by then. And he was going back to atone. Basically, there was a hit list. His dad left when he died. And Aaron LeBaron, his son, went and tried to basically revive this hit list. And he wanted to I guess, in honor of his dad, do all these blood atonement deaths, as they called it, blood atonement.
It was just, it just got passed down from brother to child to all the family. They just started killing each other. And then what made it even worse was when the funeral was held for the person who was killed, they attacked people at the funeral. Yeah. And then it was just one killing after the other. And I think that's what deeply disturbed me more than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
Not his teachings. I don't know anything about his teachings.
Well, they talked about there was something called the Book of Covenant. Polygamy, because he had like 14 wives.
Yeah.
And apparently he used religion to commit these murders. He basically was saying these were religiously justified murders. Yes.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
And he called it blood atonement, which means spill the blood. And I forget the rest of it, but it was spilling the blood in the name of God. When we interview our cult survivors, there's all this talk about God and the Bible and teachings and Sunday sermons. Yes. I didn't see any of that. And it just seemed like it was this guy, Erbil, was very disturbed. He obviously had to be a psychopath, maybe a very criminally, what do you call that when they're very smart? Mastermind.
Yes.
Because he was on the lam for years. They couldn't catch him. They just could not catch him.
Yeah, jumping all over the place. Different states. I mean, even into Mexico. He was hiding in Mexico. All kinds of places. Yeah.
Well, they were from Mexico. They started in Mexico. So that was their safe haven. That's my two cents right off the bat. It was disturbing.
It was. And I think that's why this was such a long documentary, is because they had to set the stage to explain this, because even when you were sitting there watching it, it was complicated and hard to follow. That part of it, I didn't care for, to where you were like, oh my gosh, I almost need a diagram to know what there's. And they did kind of put the family tree up at one point.
He had they like did. They put lives. A family tree up.
Yes. And it was still hard to follow. And even they were having trouble. Remember, they did put it. Agree on even how many siblings they all had. Apparently, he had 50 some children.
And a lot of them hadn't even met each other. Even talked about, two of the sisters talked about when they met each other, because many of them were able to escape early on and then they disappeared. But then when finally several of the leaders were taken down or killed, then the sisters came out of hiding. And so there's some good moments.
Yes.
When they were interviewing the family, the children who are adults now.
Yes.
They had 5, 6, or 7 of them.
Yes.
Interviewing separately, and then they were all sitting around a coffee table
together.
Or a dinner table. And it was nice to see that. I will say that much.
I agree. Yeah, it gave you a feeling for their dynamic and how they were, I'm going to say, trauma bonded. By living as one of his children, even though I don't think they all had the same mothers. They had different mothers. Although I do think the two sisters, Anna and Celia, I think they had the same mom. But the other ones, I think, all had different moms. But it was neat to see their dynamic, and nice to see them. Like, you can tell that they've done a lot of healing, because this is even though, you know, there's still trauma there, but they are at least, this is far enough in their past that they're able to talk about it. And I know that the one daughter, Anna, has written a book. So, yeah, it was. And you were talking about the murders kind of confusing you about being a cult, but think about it. Remember what they called him, Andrew? They called him the Mormon Manson, because Charles Manson ran a cult and he did those murders. They referred to him, and I don't know if it was the news media or who it was that came up with that term. I think it was the media. Came up and called, we're calling him the Mormon Manson, because
they did have a journalist or a woman who was a historian. She was a cult historian.
Yes.
And she commented. There was something that I found very interesting, because as you know, when I came onto this podcast, I was fascinated by the cult concept, and that's why I wanted to get into it and learn about them and research them. But in 2018, if you remember this, they after 20 years of like no violence, and they had finally caught the leaders, were killed or caught and put in prison. There was a period of time where there was no violence, and there seemed to be like that was the end of that until 2018. And I remember this on the news. There was a family, a mother and her four children that was driving through Mexico, and they were slaughtered. And it was right near the compound where Evril LeBaron, I'm going to keep saying LeBron. Evril LeBaron started the compound in Mexico. I forget the city. And they did an overhead view of the compound. They said it's still there and there are people still living there. And they thought this mother and her kids were from that compound. But it turned out that it was a cartel dispute. And they thought that this cartel, that these women were part of the cartel, and that's why they were killed. And I remember that story from 2018. I remember that vividly because we heard on the news.
And what are the chances of that, considering that all of the death and destruction this family had already suffered, to then have more?
They said,
of that.
Here we go again.
Yes.
Right. And they said, the news people were like, here we go, the cult starting up with the killings again, but it wasn't. The mother and her four children had nothing to do with the cult. They were just traveling somewhere, and the cartel were having a war, and they got in the middle.
Yeah.
It was just a tragedy.
It was.
And so the violence did not continue. That violence had nothing to do with the cult. So.
Right. Nobody was looking for blood atonement. I think that the people that involved with the blood atonement stuff were kind of out of the picture, so to speak, at that point. But the other description I liked, remember when I think that was the historian who described it as the Mad Max of Mexico meets Lord of the Flies. And I thought that was a perfect description. I was laughing when she said that. I'm like, oh, that one's funny. I'm writing that down because I don't want to forget to mention that, because that was a good one. But the other thing it reminded me of, which I guess it's kind of cult-like, but I don't know if it falls under the terms of a cult, is the Michigan militia, when they were talking about training children. Remember when they were talking about Dan Jordan training children as young as 6 years old how to use automatic weapons? And some reason, the Michigan militia came into my mind, and I was like, I don't know, but I'm going to have to do a little research on that and find out if that's considered a cult. I don't know if that's considered a cult.
Well, but that's what the cartel does also. And that's what in Costa Rica and in Nicaragua, they teach children as young as seven how to use AK-47s. And they were doing the same thing in here. As a matter of fact, many of the daughters were told to carry pistols because they were scared for their lives, and they went into hiding. And even though they were hiding, they were told to, everybody was given a gun. And they were told, that one of them even said that while the doorbell rang, one would go answer the door, one would go to the window, and if there was somebody there with a gun, they would just to shoot them. No questions asked. Yeah. And that's no way to live. That's just no way to live.
No, and remember the son that they were talking to, and he as an adult, but he's the one who opened the door for one of the raids where his father ended up getting arrested. And he was only 6 years old, and it was in the middle of the night, and they came knocking on the door, and he opened the door, and he said he had guilt for years, feeling like that was his fault, because you can imagine how a child might process living through something that traumatic and feeling like because he opened the door, it was somehow his fault. Not that, let's be real, Andrew. I mean, I'm sure as an adult, he has now said to himself, if he hadn't opened the door, they would have broke the damn door down, right?
That was the FBI, yeah. So for the audience to know, you know how I'm always ranting that the law enforcement never does anything? Well, I finally got to see some justice. The United States government and the federales and prosecutors were after this, several of the leaders, especially over the 4 p.m. killings. They were after Evril, I'll never pronounce it right, Evril LeBaron, Evril.
Evil LeBaron.
It's just a weird name.
Yeah, it is.
They were always, the law enforcement was on his tail and he had to move. And I was finally like, no. So if they could do that back in 1990, it was in the late 80s and all through the 90s, the law enforcement did not give up. They were after this cult and they were,
yes.
And they,
and I think again, it was because of the blatant murders they were committing. It was because I just think they
absolutely.
Were, they
oh,
were
yeah.
just blowing people away left and right and didn't care. They almost like they thought right. that they had a right, a biblical right and a legal
so,
right to just commit all these murders so, and mayhem.
So here's a rhetorical question for you. Does that mean the House of Yahweh? Does that mean Jehovah's Witness? Does that mean the Amish? Well, maybe not so much the Amish. Any of the cults that we interviewed, does that mean they have to commit murder in order to get finally to get the law enforcement to get involved? Because that seems what was the case here.
I can tell you, if you look up the House of Yahweh, there is a murder investigation right now that happened on their compound.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, there is one that is going on of somebody who died under suspicious circumstances, and it was said that I think they tried to label it a suicide or an accident. I can't remember. I want to say a suicide, but basically, if you go look at the details of this, it's very under very suspicious circumstances, and originally wasn't being looked into. But this guy's wife, the guy who died, his wife started posting things all over social media, trying to get people's attention, saying that there's something going on, and she ended up, I think, going to the Texas Rangers because she wasn't getting any help from the local law enforcement. So she just went a notch above and started asking for documentation, asking for body cam footage, all of these things that are supposed to be available to the public because she said, I want to know what happened. And I think there is some kind of cover up going on. So what's going to come of that? I don't know how much and actively it's being investigated. I'm not aware. I should try to look for that lady and see if she would come on the show and talk because she's been on another podcast. She's been on a YouTube podcast sharing her story and talking about that, the murder of her husband. And if I can find her, maybe she would be willing to come on the show and it would give her maybe a little bit of publicity too, to bring some more, shed some more light on her husband's murder. But yeah, it is nuts. This was certainly it was almost like cults gone bad. I mean, and you think it can't get much worse than a cult, but it can when you start getting, like you said, it started morphing into more of this organized crime, Michigan militia type thing where they were
just reminded me of the mafia. It was just like one hit after the other. And that I lost interest. So to the audience, Melody and I are going to be reviewing cult documentaries, and there are so many of them that we're finding them on Amazon and Hulu and HBO and Netflix. They're popping up everywhere. And we figured especially some of the newer ones, we're going to watch them and give our commentary on them because we're a cult podcast and we think it's relevant. But while watching this particular one, I really kept thinking, why am I watching this? Because it just didn't feel like a cult, although it was branded a cult. It started out as a cult, and I think today it's still considered a cult. There are, like I said, the compound is still in Mexico where it originally, where Ervil, got it right, yeah. Ervil.
Yes, Ervil.
Started, and they're, I guess, still practicing. The son talked about the Book of the Covenant, which is their Bible.
Yes.
And it's still there. As a matter of fact, several of the daughters had written some books already. We should try to get them on, the daughters, unless that's who you were talking about before. So,
I was talking about the House of Yahweh, but I was talking.
Oh, okay.
I texted you, though, and I found the two daughters and the one son on Instagram, and I was going to reach out to them, too. So to see if any of them would be willing to come on the show. So
that'd be great.
I'd love to
talk to them.
Yeah, they definitely. I think that's the other thing. I mean, I had so much empathy for them because, as children, they knew stuff was going on, but this chaos they lived under and this constantly moving around. I mean, I think the one girl said, I think in 10 years they'd moved 13 times or something. If I didn't write that down, but I think yeah, it was something.
It was something like ridiculous that. Like that.
Yeah. And she, they just so, had this lack of stability and they were very traumatized, but they did not know. They did not know all these killings and murders were going on. They did not know the law was after their dad and their dad was hiding and trying to run from the law. They just knew they had no stability and that they could suddenly be woke up in the middle of the night and told, pack your things, we're leaving right now. And they had to pack their things and they would leave immediately. And,
in the middle of the night.
Yeah, in the middle
of
the night.
One of them, they said, yeah, they left the house. They just took their, right, they took their belongings, yeah. They left the house. So I'm going to just say this to the audience. If you're looking for cult documentaries to watch, what I found the most relatable to this documentary was the two stories that I do remember back in the late 90s when I didn't know his name back then, but Erval LeBaron was national news. So this cult documentary and the cult itself made national news. They were the most wanted criminals for they're the top 10 FBI wanted list.
Yes.
The 4 p.m. killings. I remember that. As I was watching it, my memories came back and I said, oh yeah, I remember that back in 1990. And I don't have the greatest memories. And then, of course, the 2018 killing of the mother and her four children. So if you watch the documentary, you'll if you're old enough, you'll remember.
Yeah, some of these events.
Some of these events. And so it depends on what you're looking for to watch. If you're looking to watch a cult documentary because either you're an ex-cult member and you just want to watch a documentary on cult, or if you're somebody like me who has become infatuated with cults, and there are a lot of people out there. I'm in my dating world, I'm meeting women. Women love true crime stuff. I'm hearing women watching the ID Discovery Channel. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Where they watch true crime. So if you want to watch a documentary about cults, this might not be the one for you. However, if you want to watch an historical recount of a very famous family and a very some famous news headlines, they finally put together, they got everybody together. And what I found, I did find some very interesting stats at the end. Remember at the end, they gave you how many killings and how many... There's 7,000 of these family still in America, and they are descendants. They are one of the largest families in America of that name.
Yes.
So I found that to be particularly interesting. So I'm going to give it a 3.5. I'm going to give it a 3.5. I think had there been more cult discussion interviews, I would have definitely given it a 4. I don't regret watching it. I remember. I learned a lot, and I remember it.
Yeah, we're not too far off. I gave it 3.8, so a little bit closer to 4. What I really enjoyed about it, and I don't think they would have had a show without this, is the children who were also the ex members were there telling their story, their point of view, and they were giving their opinions on what had happened. They were correcting things that were wrong. Like, remember, she was saying that there was a movie made about her dad back in the day that was called something Righteous of Evil, or there was a movie made about her dad. And they all watched the movie together as a family. And one of the things they had said was, our life wasn't that nice. Our houses weren't that nice. This movie's making it look way nicer than what
Hollywood embellished it as usual. And Bryan Cranston, the actor from Breaking Bad, that was his very first movie he made. And of course, that was like in the mid 90s.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, he was in the original movie. Yeah. And I can't remember what the name of that movie was for some reason, but yes.
Breaking Bad and Malcolm in the Middle and I think that's what he was in.
This Reign of Evil, I think, was the name of that movie or something like that. So if you if you look up Bryan Cranston, you'll probably be able to find it.
Yeah, they said in the documentary that was his first major role, and I think he played a lawyer or something because they showed him in a courtroom. Yeah.
So I gave it a 3.8, and I think without them coming forward, there wouldn't have been a documentary. It would have been very dry and boring without the children there and the ex members.
Yeah. Exactly. I was just going to say a human element to it. And because otherwise it was just mayhem and murder and blood. And it was good to see the children or the adult children. And they're doing very well. They're living their own lives today. And even the son has gone off to the army. He's serving. Yes. He's serving in the United States Army. The son, I don't remember his name, but
his name's not coming the army either. But you know what I found interesting about him, too, is that he remember when he said, because some of them were like fervent believers and some of them still believe in a lot of the teachings, but he commented that he never believed that he, even as a child,
he's an atheist now.
He did. He's and he said he never now. Believed any of the teachings. So I found that interesting because that's one of those things where usually if you're born into that and it's everything you've been taught and you know, you believe it, but not always. I think there are some people that just have a sense that this isn't right from the start. And he must have had that sixth sense. I think it's worth watching, but you have to be willing to devote some time. And I give it a 3.8.
and a stomach. And just remember, there's going to be a lot of bloodshed. I just had an idea or thought that I'd love to do a survey or find out if there's a survey where how many ex-members of cults are now atheists. So you've left a cult. I know a little bit about you, that you have some beliefs, and we've talked to now 25 or more people. But this gentleman from the documentary, he specifically said, "I am an atheist." And I'd be curious to know how many people who get out of cults actually just denounce religion altogether. As a matter of fact, I think he said.
Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
He said all religions are cults.
He did say that he believes that.
Far off behind him.
A big majority of the people that I know that have left my cults, there is a pretty large percentage that are atheists. Now, have I done a survey? And no, I don't have any exact numbers, but I was quite surprised at how many just don't. And you can see why. I mean, they're burnt. They've been burnt. They've been, and they're just like, I'm staying away from that. You know, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole because quote unquote, learned their lesson.
You know what? We can look to see if there's been a research done on it, or we could do one of our own. We have plenty of all the groups that we belong to. We can put it out there to see what the percentage are atheists and you know, or do they still believe in God? Don't forget, atheist is I don't believe in a God. So not agnostic. It's an atheist. So,
right.
All right, Melody, you want to wrap this up? Or you have anything else you want to add?
No, I think we're good. So as always, we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. Your support is always greatly appreciated. Please take a moment to rate and review the podcast on platforms like Apple and Spotify. And actually, I would really appreciate it if you would put some comments down in our individual episodes in Spotify, particularly about us doing these commentaries, because Andrew and I just kind of want to get a feel for, is this something we want to continue doing? Are you guys enjoying this? Is this something that you want us to do more of? So if you could write a comment in Spotify, we'd appreciate that. And always, don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes. Go ahead, Andrew.
And also, besides Spotify, Apple. And I'm going to I'm going to drop this one. Melody and I talked about this before we recorded. We've been asking you guys for reviews for months now, and we finally got some reviews.
Yes.
And one of them is, I'm perplexed. We got 3 new reviews. We have 7 total, which is great, but of course we're going to ask you for some more. But somebody left us a review and they only gave us 3 stars. And he wrote, or she wrote, "I really like the subject matter. I know not everyone is going to continue seeking God and repentance after what they have been through, but it is disappointing. It Are you I'm asking the reviewer if he's listening or she's listening. Are you disappointed in our podcast? And why did you leave 3 stars? If you're going to rate us and you're not going to give us 5, tell us why. Because we want to bring you the best possible podcast or episodes that we can. Content. So if the audio is bad, tell us. If the music is bad, whatever. I don't understand his.
What
or
I'm going to say is that if he's upset that ex-cult members are no longer having a spiritual life or don't believe in organized religion or maybe don't believe in God, we can't control that. We can't change the way that
we can.
The people we interview, they have their own thoughts, their own opinions, their own beliefs, and we don't try to influence that at all. So I don't know if that's why the rating was there, but if it is, that is completely out of our control.
Yeah, it's disappointing. We had 5.0 and we got 6 5-star ratings, and then this one comes along and knocks us down. And I'm not angry. I just would like to know why he thought that we only deserve 3, because when you read the review, I can't figure out
what he's saying. It sounds like he's disappointed about the results of people's reactions after they leave, which I don't think is necessarily fair to rate our guests. You rate the podcast.
Right. Yeah. So all right. I just wanted just to get that out. But thank you to everybody who has left a review. When I'm not discouraging
absolutely.
You. Just
100%.
Please just tell us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what you would like to hear, what you don't like to hear. And like Melody said, go over to Spotify. You can rate or you can comment each and every episode. So
yes,
you can also show your support by joining our Facebook group under the name Cultimania Podcast.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and now Threads.
If you have a cult or human trafficking experience you'd like to share with us, please feel free to contact us at cultimaniapodcast@gmail.com.
And ex-cult members looking for any additional support can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
And if you're interested in hearing more from me on my podcast, head over to Anonymous Andrew Podcast, Life and the Choices We Make.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you're not alone.